Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. We open our show today with an update on the San Diego mayoral election. The race appears destined for a runoff, since no candidate captured over 50% of the votes needed to win outright. Republican Kevin Faulkner and Democrat David Alvarez now appear set for a runoff race in yet another special election expected to be set for February. With 100% of precincts counted, but thousands of absentee ballots still waiting to be tallied, Councilman Kevin Faulkner, the only Republican in the race, leads with 43.58%. Nearly all of the remaining vote, about 55%, was split between three Democratic contenders. Councilman David Alvarez, the Democratic Party's endorsed candidate, is in second place with 25.59%, followed closely by former Assemblyman Nathan Fletcher with 24.3%. Former City Attorney Michael Aguirre, the third Democratic candidate, has 4.4% of the vote currently. And now Fletcher has conceded the election and announced that he will endorse David Alvarez. The candidates are vying to fill the seat vacated by Bob Vilner's resignation, replacing interim mayor Todd Gloria. But Gloria will hold on to that position for a few more months. While Faulkner clearly benefited in the primary from a three-way split among likely Democratic voters, he faces a rockier road in the general election with the reality that a strong majority of voters cast their ballots for Democratic candidates, and the city now has a majority of registered voters who are Democrats. Whether votes for Fletcher or for Aguirre will translate into votes for Alvarez or votes for Faulkner remains to be seen. The race will pit classic business and development interests against labor and minority constituencies as the battle continues. If Alvarez wins, he would be San Diego's first Latino mayor. Since both Faulkner and Alvarez are current council members, whoever wins the mayoral election will leave a vacancy on the council that will be filled by an appointment approved by the full city council. But the appointment won't be a stepping stone to a long tenure, because any appointee is banned by the city charter from running for re-election when the term is up. While this is a San Diego City mayoral election, the outcome impacts all San Diego County residents, since the next mayor could make crucial decisions on issues such as energy, fire safety, and water, issues that impact people throughout our region.
This is Ariel Johansson with a Crime Beat Report. A Spring Valley resident has learned that indoor marijuana growing can be hazardous to your health and your wealth. And no, we're not talking about smoking pot. We're talking about a pot-growing operation going up in smoke, along with the house where it was found. A home on Campo Road in Spring Valley caught fire on Tuesday morning. Firefighters from San Miguel Fire District and Cal Fire quickly discovered that the cause of the fire was an illegal electrical connection from the house to an adjacent power pole. This illegal connection made fighting the fire extremely hazardous for firefighters because power could not be turned off at the meter. Once inside, firefighters soon discovered a marijuana growing operation. A pit bull dog that escaped the flames is now under the care of County Animal Control. Investigators with the San Miguel Fire District will continue the investigation into the fire. However, an investigation into the marijuana growing operation has been turned over to the Narcotics Task Force, which has identified a person of interest. Damage to the structure is estimated at $40,000, not counting the lost value of 40 to 50 mature marijuana plants ready for harvest, or the stolen electricity value for which SDG&E could hold the suspect liable. You could say that the entire operation has gone to pot.
This is Ed Barrettum with East County Magazine. Assemblymember Shirley Weber from San Diego will convene the first hearing of the Assembly Select Committee on Higher Education in San Diego County this Thursday, November 21st, from 4:30 to 7 p.m. The hearing will be held at the State Building, 1350 Front Street, Room B109 in San Diego. This informational hearing will examine the state of education within the San Diego region. Specifically, the hearing will focus on assessing student access and exploring what educational opportunities exist within the region. One issue the committee will explore is why residents have so few public higher education options, although the county is the third most populated in the state. In early 2013, Speaker of the Assembly John Perez announced the creation of the Select Committee on Higher Education Issues in San Diego County and appointed Assemblymember Weber to serve as chair.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with today's Capitol Report. A battle is brewing in the U.S. Senate over a proposal aimed at protecting women in the military from sexual assault and increasing prosecutions of offenders. According to the Defense Department, reports of sexual assaults shot up 46% in the last budget year, with 3,353 complaints filed from October through June. That's just half the year. But Senator Kirsten Gillibrand points out that an anonymous survey of military personnel conducted by the Pentagon found that 26,000 said they were sexually assaulted last year in the military. Senator Gillibrand says most sexual assaults were not reported because victims didn't trust the chain of command or they feared retaliation. So she is proposing to strip commanders of the authority to prosecute cases of sexual assault, instead handing off these cases to experienced military lawyers outside the chain of command. It's all part of an annual defense policy that would also prohibit commanders from overturning jury convictions and require dishonorable discharge or dismissal for anybody who is convicted of sexual assault. In addition, it would establish a civilian review when a decision is made not to prosecute a case. Gillibrand says she has 50 votes for the measure, enough to pass the Senate, but not the 60 votes needed to prevent a filibuster. Her support includes some Republicans and Democrats, men as well as women. But the provision has strong opposition from some top military leaders and key senators, including Senator Carl Levin, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and Senator John McCain, former presidential candidate. Those opposed claim Gillibrand's plan would cost $113 million each year, including salaries for those 600 lawyers and support staff needed to prosecute the vast army of sexual assault cases occurring in our armed forces.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine's Tribal Beat. November is American Indian Heritage Month. KPBS and Union Bank have chosen two very special Native American women to honor as local heroes. Jane Dumas is a tribal elder in the Hamul Band of Kumeyaay Indians in East County. She is founder of the San Diego American Indian Health Center, and she's been a board member for the Indian Human Resource Center since 1986. She also supported the American Indian Tobacco Education Network, the California Indian Basket Weavers Association, and the California Indian Storytellers Association, and is an active master speaker for the Advocates for Indigenous California Language Survival. In 2002, she was inducted into the San Diego County Women's Hall of Fame, and on April 28, 2012, the City of San Diego honored her by proclaiming it Jane Dumas Day. She has spent a lifetime teaching, leading, and advocating for the American Indian community of San Diego, always emphasizing the value and importance of traditional language and history in today's urban and American Indian societies. She's made it her lifelong mission to teach the language of the Kumeyaay people to American Indians and non-Indians alike, and to share the healing powers of native plants. Rose Margaret Orantia is the program manager at the Academy for Professional Excellence Tribal Star Program at San Diego State University, which aids Native American foster youth in their transitions to adult life. Ms. Orantia has served as the Executive Director of Indian Child and Family Services, a state-licensed foster family and adoption agency serving the American Indian population in San Diego and Riverside. She participated in a movement of Native American social workers advocating for changes in the foster care system that helped shape what became the Indian Child Welfare Act, passed in 1978. She has a bachelor's degree in English and a master's degree in counselor education. A strong Native American children's advocate, Ms. Orrentia is also the former executive director of Indian Child and Family Services. In 2012, she was presented the George D. Nickel Award for her commitment to the advancement of social welfare. KPBS General Manager Tom Carlos said, "KPBS is proud to feature these honorees in our programming as they inspire us and make a positive difference in our neighborhoods and in the world."
Three Somali immigrants in San Diego were sentenced Monday by U.S. District Judge Jeffrey Miller for providing support to foreign terrorists. According to U.S. Attorney Laura Duffy, the evidence included intercepted phone calls regarding assassinations, suicide bombing, and jihad. Basali Saeed Moalin, a cab driver, was sentenced to 18 years in prison after being convicted by a federal jury of providing material support to the terrorist group Al-Shabaab. At the same hearing, Mohammed Mohamud, the imam at a popular mosque frequented by the city's immigrant Somali community, was sentenced to 13 years in prison. Isadore, who worked at a money-transmitting business that was the conduit for moving the illicit funds, was sentenced to serve 10 years in prison. In sentencing Moalin, Judge Miller acknowledged the defendant's considerable support from the Somali community, his childhood scars from violence in war-torn Somalia, and his philanthropy as a naturalized American. However, the judge noted that Moalin's virtuous behavior is substantially offset by his collaboration with al-Shabaab and one of its most prominent leaders, Aden Hashi Airo. Judge Miller said he imposed part of the sentence consecutively, making it 3 years longer, because Moalin went beyond financial assistance and provided a house to Airo in Mogadishu to advance the agenda of al-Shabaab and to help hide weapons. Ironically, many in San Diego's Somali community came here to the U.S. fleeing persecution by al-Shabaab terrorists in their homeland. At trial, the United States prosecutor played for the jury a recorded telephone conversation in which Moalin gave the terrorists in Somalia permission to use his house, telling Airo that after you bury your stuff deep in the ground, you would then plant trees on top. Prosecutors argued at trial that Moalin was offering a place to hide weapons. U.S. Attorney Laura Duffy said, "These men willfully sent money to a terrorist organization, knowing al-Shabaab's extremely violent methods and knowing the U.S. had designated it as a foreign terrorist organization." Months of intercepted phone conversations included discussion of suicide bombing, assassinations, and jihad. "We are satisfied that because of this investigation and prosecution, we have furthered our mission to safeguard national security by blocking financial support to this dangerous group," she said. Moalin and his co-conspirators were found guilty during a 3-week trial in February. The U.S. presented evidence that Moalin, Mohamud, Doré, and a fourth defendant conspired to provide money to al-Shabaab, a brutal militia group that engages in suicide bombings, targets civilians for assassination, and uses improvised explosive devices. In February 2008, the U.S. Department of State formally designated al-Shabaab as a foreign terrorist organization. At trial, the jury listened to dozens of the defendants' intercepted telephone conversations, including many between Moalin and Airo. In those calls, Airo implored Moalin to send money to al-Shabaab, telling Moalin that it was, quote, time to finance the jihad. Airo was subsequently killed in a missile strike on May 1, 2008. According to evidence at trial, the defendants conspired to transfer the funds from San Diego to Somalia through the Shidal Express, a now-defunct money-transmitting business in San Diego. A fourth defendant, Ahmed Nasiri Talil Mohamud, a cab driver from Anaheim, is scheduled to be sentenced January 31, 2014, also before Judge Miller. This case was prosecuted in federal court in San Diego by Assistant U.S. Attorneys William Cole and Carolyn Hahn and Department of Justice trial attorney Stephen Ward. The case was investigated by the San Diego Joint Terrorism Task Force, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Department of Homeland Security, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the Department of Homeland Security, Customs and Border Protection. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barena with the Holiday Safety Report. Thanksgiving is almost here, and East County Magazine's own in-house fire chief and columnist Sam DiGiovanna is talking turkey. Here are his Thanksgiving safety tips. Thanksgiving signifies the beginning of the holiday season, and many of us will be spending more time in the kitchen preparing for the holidays over the next week. Chief DiGiovanna says, let's start thinking safety, as Thanksgiving Day is the leading day for home cooking fires, with three times as many occurring on Thanksgiving as any other day of the year. Thanksgiving is a fun, festive holiday, but it's also very hectic. All the entertaining and distractions make it easy to forget about what's cooking on the stovetop, he added. These fires are preventable by simply being more attentive to the use of cooking materials and equipment. Don't become a cooking fire casualty. First, be careful wearing loose clothing around open flames on the stove. Use a timer and use Post-its to remind yourself of cooking times in the oven. Be careful using candles at the dinner table, especially if toddlers are present. Use oven mitts when handling hot pots and pans. Do not cool hot pans with water if grease is in them. Have a fire extinguisher nearby and know how to use it. Stay alert. If you are sleepy or have consumed alcohol, don't use the stove or stovetop. Keep a lid nearby when cooking to smother small grease fires. Smother the fire by sliding the lid over the pan and turn off the stovetop. Leave the pan covered until it is completely cooled. For an oven fire, turn off the heat and keep the door closed. If you have a cooking fire, you can't stop with these simple steps. Just get out. When you leave, close the door behind you and help contain the fire. Call 911 or the local emergency number from outside the home. Have a happy and safe Thanksgiving.
4 years ago, in July 2009, U.S. Border Patrol agent Robert Rosas Jr., a young husband and father, was murdered while on duty in Campo. This week, a second defendant has been sentenced in this brutal crime. Marcos Rodriguez Perez, a 28-year-old Mexican national, was sentenced to 56 years in prison after pleading guilty. He admitted he was one of three gunmen who lured the agent into a trap to steal his night vision goggles and then fatally shot him during a struggle. He also pled guilty to conspiracy to commit robbery and kidnapping and carrying of a firearm during the commission of a violent crime. Rodriguez was also found to have violated probation from a prior conviction for smuggling aliens, so the combined sentences will likely mean he spends the rest of his life behind bars. Back in April 2010, Christian Daniel Castro Alvarez was sentenced to 40 years imprisonment for his role in the killing. Two other defendants have pled guilty to participating in the murder and are scheduled to be sentenced in December and January. The last defendant, Jose Juan Chacon Morales, remains a fugitive, and there is a reward of up to $100,000 for information leading to the arrest or location of Jose Juan Chacon Morales. Chief Patrol Agent Paul Beeson of the U.S. Border Patrol's San Diego sector expressed gratitude for the persistence and hard work by law enforcement involved in the case that resulted in the arrest and conviction of Rodriguez. He said, "This sentencing is tempered with the sobering reality of the senseless loss of a fine man, husband and father, who was Border Patrol Agent Robert Rosas." FBI Special Agent in Charge Daphne Hearn added that the sentencing sends a message that the FBI is committed to bringing to justice those responsible for the death of U.S. Border Patrol Agent Robert Rosas. Agent Hearn concluded, "Agent Rosas served his country with dedication, honor, and courage, and was killed while protecting our nation's borders. The FBI recognizes that no punishment will lessen Agent Rosas' death, but we hope today's sentencing will help bring some closure to the family." Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. To help brighten the holidays for families in need, the Salvation Army in El Cajon will be holding the 38th annual East County Toy and Food Drive this year. If your family needs help with food or gifts for your children this holiday season, you can apply for help by filling out an application on Saturday, November 23rd, or on Saturday, December 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon and from 1:30 to 3 o'clock at the Salvation Army offices. The offices are located at 1011 East Main Street in El Cajon. The toys are for children ages 12 and under. Space is limited, and you must appear in person to apply. No applications will be completed without all verifications requested. To get details, call 619-440-4683, extension 401. You, your group, or your organization are welcome to drop off donations to the Salvation Army location as well. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas wildfire and emergency alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The thrill is gone for bike riders in Rancho San Diego. Cuyamaca College has begun to enforce restrictions on use of a nature preserve at the Rancho San Diego campus that had been a popular but illegal spot for young bike riders. The area off Fury Road has long been used by bikers who created dirt mounds that enabled them to perform their daredevil tricks. The college is closing the area, which is part of a sensitive wildlife habitat, while it removes the bumps and replants vegetation to restore the area to its natural state. On Tuesday, the college posted no trespassing signs along Fury Road, along with a telephone number to College President Mark Zakovic's office. The college president provided pizza and soft drinks at a meeting with other college leaders and about 50 bikers on Saturday to explain why they could no longer ride their bikes there. He told the group, "We need to be responsible and follow the rules of state agencies to keep this as a habitat." The area, about 4 acres, is part of a 53-acre nature preserve on the campus that was set aside in 1994 as mitigation for construction of college buildings. It is also a breeding area for the gnatcatcher bird, an endangered species. Only hiking trails are allowed in the preserve, and the trails already in place in the rest of the preserve remain open. The dirt mounds used by the bikers have been in existence for at least a decade, but no action was taken while college officials focused on educating some 10,000 students a year. The State Department of Fish and Wildlife, however, has recently notified the college that the dirt mounds must be removed and the preserve restored. Several bikers complained that they had no other place to test their skills, and college leaders urged them to organize and seek other property to use. Zakovic complimented the bikers for keeping the area clean and free of trash through the years. The mounds will be removed in the next few weeks. Eventually, hiking trails will be created that will link with other trails in the preserve. Zakovic concluded, "I look forward to the day when we can reopen this area to the public. This preserve is a wonderful natural resource for our community." This is Miriam Raftery with a traffic alert for motorists planning on traveling Highway 15 or Highway 52 in the next few days. Caltrans has announced that eastbound State Route 52 will be closed Wednesday and Saturday nights for paving and restriping. The closures are part of an ongoing project to repair dips in the pavement. The convoy ramp will also be impacted. On Wednesday night, November 20th, eastbound 52 will be closed from Convoy Street to Kearney Villa Road from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. Thursday morning. On Saturday, eastbound State Route 52 will be closed from Convoy Street to Kearney Villa Road from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. on Sunday. Signs will be posted advising motorists of the closures and available detours. On Wednesday and Thursday nights this week, construction activity will also require closure of southbound Interstate 15 between Mira Mesa Boulevard and Carroll Canyon Road from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. These closures will allow crews to continue construction of the Mira Mesa direct access ramp that will support future mass transit. During the closures, the southbound express lanes will be open and free of charge to all motorists. Signs will be posted on the freeway in advance to direct drivers to express lanes on other detours. Motorists are reminded to slow down and safely move over a lane when Caltrans or other emergency vehicles are displaying flashing amber lights. It's the law, and violators can face stiff fines in a construction zone.
Hello, I'm Sergeant Mark Vernon with the Sheriff's Department, assigned to the CATCH team, which investigates high technology and internet crimes. Families love posting photos on Facebook, Twitter, and Flickr, and other social media sites to show their family and friends what they've been up to. But did you know these snapshots could be revealing a lot more than you think, and exposing you and your family to serious danger? When you take a photo with your cell phone, you could be giving away your most personal location information through geotagging. It's when a GPS-enabled smartphone saves the location of where you took the photo. It's basically broadcasting your location at any given point in time. With the right software, the geomarkers embedded in the photos you post online can tell a pedophile, stalker, or burglar exactly where you took the photos, right down to the sideline of the field or the bedroom in your home. That means criminals can pinpoint the exact spot of your child on a playground, where you live, and where you hang out. Burglars can also monitor your postings and activities to find out where you go and when you aren't home. They can then use that information to plan a kidnapping, break-in, or other crime. So what can you do about it? It's easy. Just turn off the GPS feature for photos on your phone. It won't affect any of the other GPS applications such as maps, web search, or lost phone tracking. Here's how you turn off the photo GPS on an iPhone. Just go to the settings, then hit privacy, then location services. There you can turn off camera tracking as well as any other apps you don't want tracked. The process for an Android phone varies, so please ask your phone provider for assistance. And remember, be careful what you post online. If you want to report internet crimes, call 858-565-5200.
For the past 8 years, the Alpine Women's Club has sponsored its Christmas in Alpine home tour. However, this year, the group has only one house for its tour and is seeking additional homes to showcase in Alpine. The fundraiser helps to provide scholarships that the club gives away each year. Since 1950, the Alpine Women's Club has given away more than $95,000 to exceptional Alpine graduating seniors, said Carla Anderson, president of the Alpine Women's Club. She added, "We are reaching out to the community and looking for Alpine residents who love to decorate for the holidays and would enjoy sharing their decorating skills with others." The event is scheduled for Saturday, December 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. If you are interested in being part of this festive event, you will also be invited to the club's Christmas party starting at 3 p.m. at the Alpine Women's Club located in historic Town Hall Building. There will be food, refreshments, and surprises. For more information, contact Carla Anderson at 445-2055 extension 11 or email the Alpine Women's Club at AOL.com.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. As the 2013 holidays approach, we'll be bringing you holiday events as they happen, or in our preview section at the end of Destination East County. We'll also feature ongoing holiday activities for you. The Mother Goose Parade will be held for the 67th time on Sunday, November 24th, always the Sunday before Thanksgiving, in downtown El Cajon. The parade rolls out at 10 a.m. at the corner of East Main Street and Magnolia Avenue and continues eastbound on East Main Street to 2nd Street. Spectators can look forward to marching bands, local dignitaries, and parade floats. After the parade, they can stop by Mother Goose Village at the Prescott Promenade for activities. Three Perspectives on Nature, an art exhibit, is being featured at the Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation's Visitors Center. The public is cordially invited to a reception in honor of the artists on Sunday, November 24th, from 1 to 4 p.m. The exhibition highlights three award-winning photographers, Debbie Beals, Darcy Hook, and Janice Rodebush, and will be on display at the Visitors Center Art Gallery from November 16th through December 13th. Descanso is hosting an arts and crafts fair this Saturday, November 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the historical Descanso Town Hall, where shoppers can enjoy free refreshments, listen to some wonderful live music, and purchase handcrafted items, all while taking in the fresh mountain air along with a little backcountry hospitality. Camp beneath the stars in the Anza-Borrego Desert this Saturday, November 23rd. Astronomer Scott Baker will host this unique event, bringing along his 14-inch telescope. A chuck wagon dinner will also be provided. The event is hosted by California Overland Desert Excursions. Their upcoming events include a journey to the Salton Sea and camp out during the Geminids meteor shower. The Lamplighters Community Theater presents a staged reading of Hot Flashes, the comedy. Curtain times are 7:30 p.m. on Friday, November 22nd and Saturday, November 23rd, and 2 p.m. on Sunday, November 24th. Another event taking stage is the ongoing You Missed, a new comedy program packed with humor, lots of strange stories from around the world, political perspectives from the right, left, and people that just don't give a darn. You Missed is performed live at the Space Bar in La Mesa on Sunday nights from 6 to 7 p.m. Now for some ongoing holiday events. Viejas Outlet Skating Rink in Alpine is open each holiday season and winter, where skaters and non-skaters alike may enjoy this outdoor ice rink, which is larger than the famed Rockefeller Center rink in New York and the largest in Southern California. Guests can enjoy shopping, holiday decor, and entertainment, and then skate or sip hot chocolate ordered from the rinkside snack bar menu. If skaters bring a new unwrapped toy worth $5 or more by December 4th, they can get a discount on skating prices. The Santa Train, the North Pole Limited, is accepting reservations now for this ongoing Christmas rail journey every Saturday and Sunday from December 6th through December 21st. Starting at the Campo Railroad Museum with fun and good cheer, guests will board the Limited. As it leaves the depot, Santa's elves will serve cookies and hot chocolate. An onboard book reading of a popular Christmas story leads up to the arrival at Santa's workshop, where the train will stop just long enough for Santa to board the train for the return trip to Campo. Santa will visit with all of the children on the train. Reservations are required in advance. Grossmont Center Shopping Mall in La Mesa is offering a series of free events each weekend in December, including concerts, crafts with the Grinch, Mrs. Claus, Santa's Elves, and Frosty the Snowman, and gift giveaways. We will be bringing you details in the upcoming weeks. Now for a preview of some other events, Waddle and Trot 5K is a new East County Thanksgiving tradition on Thursday, November 28th at 8 a.m. Pathways Community Church will be hosting the second annual Waddle and Trot 5K and Fun Run. This fun family event is intended for runners and walkers of every fitness level, and all proceeds go to Santee's, Santa's, and the Santee Food Bank. A fun run is planned for kids age 10 and under and kicks off at 9 a.m. within the Pathways parking lot. The Lakeside Historical Society is hosting its 25th annual holiday home tour on Saturday, December 7th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Enjoy a self-guided tour of 5 unique homes in the Lakeside area, including one with an exceptional view of Rattlesnake Mountain and 2 Marina Valley homestead cottages with collectibles, Clydesdale horses, antiques, and unique decorations. Ticket sales help preservation efforts and can be purchased from the Historical Society's Old Community Church on Main Avenue in the heart of Lakeside's Historic District. The History Center is open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., or you may call their office. The Lakeside Museum next door to the Historical Society Church will also be open on tour day for guests to see antiques donated by Lakeside Pioneer families, as well as the Mrs. Claus Christmas resale shop.
Ho, ho, ho!
lions, tigers, and bears in Alpine, San Diego's only big cat and exotic animal rescue, has an upcoming Christmas festival on Saturday, December 7th from 12 to 4 p.m. Guests will be able to watch the animal friends open presents, as well as shop at this event with lots of local vendors. Food, entertainment, and Santa Claus are also offered. A VIP package is available. Arbor Day at Mission Trails Regional Park is being celebrated at the equestrian staging area on Saturday, December 7th at 9 a.m. The public is invited to take part in the donation and or planting of oak trees. Volunteers may help with the planting or act as cheerleaders. Volunteers are also needed to pull weeds and help with general landscape maintenance of the area. Some shovels will be available, but it would be helpful if you could bring your own. Gloves and comfortable shoes are recommended. Alpine Village Christmas Parade of Lights rolls out along with a snow festival on Friday, December 6th at 6:30 p.m. This event is organized by the Alpine Chamber. Young Actors Theater will be staging its production of Home for the Holidays on December 12th through 15th at the Encore Theater on Campo Road in Spring Valley. This musical celebration is a two-act, variety-type show with group opening and closing numbers. In between, there will be small groups, solos, duets, and dance numbers with a Christmas theme. The Salvation Army Croc Center's Croc Kids Junior Theater Company presents the holiday classic Babes in Toyland with some fresh new music throughout the weekend of December 13th through 15th at the Joan B. Croc Theater. Showtime is 7 p.m. both Friday and Saturday, and 2 p.m. on Sunday. This family-friendly performance features more than 30 local children ages 8 to 17 years. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festival and events section at www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Wind turbines killed over 600,000 bats last year in the United States. That's according to Bioscience, which made the projection based on the startling number of dead bats found at 21 wind energy facilities. The number could be higher by 50%. Or nearly a million total bat deaths in a single year, says the author Mark Hayes at the University of Colorado. Unlike birds, which are killed when they actually strike the blades of wind turbines, bats can also die from changes in air pressure caused by the blades that make their lungs explode. Bats play an important role in the ecosystem. They eat insects, so without them, farmers would have to use far more pesticides. Bats also help pollinate certain crops, notably avocados, one of San Diego County's biggest cash crops, raising serious questions about the impact that industrial wind facilities proposed here could have on local agriculture. For East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson reporting. This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. I'm here today at Sequan with Daniel Tucker, the chairman of the Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Today they are debuting a brand new documentary film called Our People, Our Culture, Our History. And it's about the history of the Sequan Band and the Kumeyaay Nation. Chairman Tucker, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. We're really excited about that.
Tell us about the film. What made you decide to make this documentary?
You know, if you would go downtown today or anywhere in the United States, let's say in San Diego, mm-hmm. and you ask the average person out there, do you know what Sequan is? And can you explain to me what an Indian tribe is? And they'll say, yeah. They talk about the Plains Indians. They don't talk about the Indians from California. Because they talk about teepees and those kind of things. That's what they always say in schools and all that kind of stuff. But we lived in huts here in San Diego County because of the climate. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have to dress like they did back in the Plains Indians. What happened with us is that since the climate was so well, we used to make our huts out of willow branches. And that's why we lived. That's how we made our villages. And we want people to know who we really are. We're not Plains Indians. We're Indians from California. And we call ourselves Natives now, but Native Americans, which is even...
Right, the original Native Californians.
Exactly. So what's exciting about this whole documentary, it tells the history of the Kumeyaay people now, here in San Diego County.
And does it include the Kumeyaay in what's now Mexico?
Yes,
as well?
It does. What was unfortunate, when they put up the border, a lot of our tribes who were Kumeyaay tribes still are still there. And sometimes it's pretty difficult to go see them because we have to go across the border, have to do this. We take them stuff like clothes or anything we can. We have to go through a lot of bureaucracy to do that. Mm-hmm. But they're still doing fine down there. But they are our brothers and sisters, which is pretty interesting. When we decided to do this documentary, we didn't want it to be a story, per se. We want to tell the real history, what happened to the Native Americans in San Diego County and in California. What was the life like? How did we live? What did we eat? Where we lived? In the summertime, we lived in the mountains. In the wintertime, we lived down by the ocean, because that's where food is plenty. We lived a lot along the Sweetwater River right there, because that's where all the water was, fresh water, and the San Diego River as well. Mm-hmm. One of our biggest villages was right below Presidio Park, where the Great War Old Town is.
Yes.
And that was to be a huge Native village at the time. Then, unfortunately, when the big migration came from the east, we ended up with 1 square mile of land out of all the land here in California. And even in San Diego County, we got 1 square
wow.
mile.
Such a tragedy.
640 acres. And if you ever come out here and see Sequan, the original reservation, you see half of it's a mountain. Mm-hmm. So we've had very little land to work with. But we survived. We survived what we did, and we started to, you know, go with the way of life as it was at the time. When they opened up the first school in Dehesa Valley, that school is over 130 years old, and our people went there. And it was really strange to them because they weren't allowed to speak our language. They had to speak the white man's language, and they had to deal with that.
Adopt the dress and the customs
of
the white man.
Adopt the dress and customs, the whole bit. And it was a scary time for us. It was really a time where, wow, what's going to happen with us?
It was really a sense of cultural genocide, in a sense, wasn't it?
Totally in California. Not just in San Diego County, but all the way up along the coast. The first governor of California, I forgot his name, his biggest comment was, a good Indian is a dead Indian.
Wow.
And that was unfortunate. But I don't know if you ever heard his story about Ishii.
Yes.
He's
the last Indian of his particular tribe.
That's right, up in the Sacramento area. And Mrs. Hurst took him in. And somebody knew his language, and they finally got to talk to him a little bit. But, it was a genocidal thing. But we persevered. We just, you know, we hung in there. We had to do what we had to do to survive. And we did. And what's happening today, doing this documentary, we want the people of San Diego and this country to know who we really are as a people. We've been here for 12,000 years. And how we lived, where we went to pick our acorns, our harvest time. We do All Souls Day, mm-hmm. and our traditions and culture have since we started doing this, the gaming hole situation, and I have to explain this, is very, very important. People think of Indian tribes today as casino-owned. Casinos are a part of our business. We are a government first. No ifs and buts about it. We are a government, and we have to treat our people as we would like to be treated, and we want to be fair. We want to be sure that our government is running like it should be. So at the time, they didn't call us chiefs. They called us captains during those days, and the captain had all the responsibility to making sure their tribe ate. There was enough food for everyone. If somebody shot a deer, all the families got to eat.
So the casino is, in a sense, a modern-day means of bringing prosperity to the Native American people, and it's certainly not the only business venture that Sequan has. Tell us a little bit about, for people who don't know, some of the
exactly.
other things you're doing today and some of the things you've done for the community, the broader community as well.
Yeah, it's exciting to me, being part of this. I was chairman when we did Prop 5 and Prop 1A. And that was to have legalized gaming in California.
Mm-hmm.
The Indians of California changed the Constitution of California, enabling us to do what we have today. And so we have our casino, but what's bigger than that, we're allowed to diversify, and that we're doing. We bought the U.S. Grant Hotel, 4th and Broadway downtown. We own the land under the Solomar Hotel, downtown San Diego. We have a business called Marina Gateway down in National City, and we also have a this is really cool, the golf course. The old Singing Hills Golf Course, now is a Quan Resort.
That's right.
So we just put those acres, 1,400, matter of fact, into trust status to make it a part of our reservation as of today. And we built new homes for our people. And right now we're doing the whole infrastructure, new water lines. All our telephone wires are going to go underground, the gas, the whole bit. And we're doing that on our own.
Good.
We're not asking anything from the state. All we ask them to do is let us do what we need to do to make ourselves survive. Because there's laws out there we have to find, environmental, all that stuff,
sure.
We still have to follow.
Speaking of environmental, last year you put on a conference down at the Grand Hotel about the impacts of some of the big energy and mining projects on indigenous people, including the Kumeyaay in Mexico.
That's correct.
Touched on at all in the documentary?
Not that part, just a little bit. You know, we do have people on the other side of the border, but not that much. It's mostly about the Sequan and the Kumeyaay people of San Diego County.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize San Diego County has more tribes than any state in the continental United States.
Yes.
There are 18 tribes in San Diego County, and most of them are Kumeyaay. And if you need to understand, as our name says, we are the Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The word band is very important, because band is, we're a band, Hamul's a band, Viejas is a band, Campo, Manzanita, all those tribes out there who are bands of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Right.
So we have our own government on each individual reservation.
Now, in recent times, Sequan has been very good neighbors to the broader community. The Sequan Band has given back quite a bit. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about
that? Yes, I think that is extremely important to this tribe, because what we have here is a situation where we live in San Diego. We're part of San Diego. We're part of our community. And we've always been taught by our elders, always give something to somebody. And in this case, we're giving back to San Diego County. Like this past weekend, I didn't run. I walked for the Susan Komen Breast Cancer Walk.
Okay, good.
And we give $30,000 for that to be part of the sponsorship for that, because it's very important to us. We gave to Radish Children's Hospital, the Diabetes Association, all the things that people really are involved in off the reservation.
Fire protection.
Fire protection, a whole bit. In fact, our fire department covers all of Dehesa Valley. And it's just, most of the people here appreciate it. There are some who still have some issues, but still, we're doing the right thing. We are giving back to our community, and we think that's important. Because San Diego comes to play here.
Mm-hmm.
They come and enjoy what we have here at Sequan, whether it be the casino, the hotel, the resort, or anything that we have. People seem to go there more often because, one, they know we give them back to San Diego. When I was bowling, all the people used to come to me, we play at Sequan because we know you give back to the community. And that just makes you feel good. People do notice those things.
Yes, that's very important.
And what this documentary is telling you is that we are that kind of people, the people who are going to give back, the people who give.
Excellent.
I'll tell you, this is important. We invite people out to the reservation. Are they come and visit us? The first thing we ask them, are you hungry?
Mm-hmm.
And we take them in to feed them. During some of the people coming across the border, and sometimes illegally, that's okay, but those people are hungry, too.
Sure.
So we fed them. We fed them and nourished them and gave them water and those kind of things, because we don't want nobody to starve or nobody to be hurt. So we opened them with open arms. San Diego has been a great part of that, us being able to do those things.
Can you tell us a little bit about what's gone into the making of this documentary? How big a project was this?
A lot. It was huge. Just been working this over a year. And one of our tribal members named Cody Martinez, he's actually he took the lead in this thing. Because I can't do everything, Mr. Chairman, because I have so much sort of stuff to deal with. And he took this and embraced it and did a tremendous job with it. Did a tremendous job. He got to all our elders. He's gotten to Ms. Florence Shipek when she was alive. She was an anthropologist in this area and really did a whole study of the Kumeyaay people. The Museum of Man, we used them. And we used all the high-ranking anthropologists and historians in San Diego who really had a part in making of this film.
I know that it's a Kumeyaay tradition to think 7 generations ahead. If you look 7 generations ahead, Chairman,
we look
what do you want?
7 generations.
What do you want to see for the future for
one,
the Sequan Band and the Kumeyaay Nation?
I see this tribe still being what it is, never forgetting who we are, where we are, and where we came from. But they have to protect our sovereign right as a government and a nation. in the United States, because that's important. Because without that sovereignty issue, we're just like everybody else. But because we do have that sovereign status, we are a government, and we use it as that, and we be fair, we work with our people, as the people are our bosses. So when you're elected, you better do the right thing for our people, not just for one individual. It has to be for everybody.
We would all be better off if every elected official had that attitude.
Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great?
Thank you very, very much. Is there any final words that you have for us?
I'd like to say just come out to Sequoia, and maybe you see the casino, that's fine. But look at the land itself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got to tell my daughter, her name is Charlene, she says, the land don't belong to us. We belong to the land. That quote just stuck with me until this day, and it's just the truth. We are protectors of the land. And we do that.
Very good. And listeners can visit the Sequan website. It's sequan.com. And view the documentary online also. I understand our people, our culture, our history, the history of the Sequan Band and the Kumeyaay Nation.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Chairman.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk to you now about why we call fall our planting season in Southern California. Obviously, we don't want to plant in August and September when it is so hot and so miserable. So what would we want to plant now and why? Well, for now, even though the rains may not have started, and I'm talking about October, November, December, the nights are cooler, the days are cooler, we don't have those August heat waves of 100 degrees, and once the Santa Anas are through, it's a great time to get things in the ground. What's the best thing to plant now? Now is the time to put in your trees, your native plants, your fall flowers that you pick up at the local nursery, and not to plant tropicals. We don't put in any tropicals now. By tropicals, I mean all the plants you think of when you think of Hawaii, everything you think of when you think of house plants that can grow outdoors. These are all tropical plants that are subject to being frosted. They don't like cold winter weather, so don't put them in the ground now. If you are in a very frost-prone area, then what you don't want to do is plant your citrus, your avocados, and anything tender right now. Think about where the plants originated. You don't have to look up every single plant that you want to grow, but if something is called Japanese something or other, that means that it will get by with cold weather, and you don't have to worry about planting it now. If it's something that's called Hawaiian something, I would be very leery of planting it in the fall, because it's probably highly subject to freezes and frosts. Why would you want to plant natives now, and why would you want to put in shrubs and landscape plants now? The plants that you put in now will not show much visible growth during the winter time, but underground, all sorts of exciting things will be happening. The roots will be growing. The plants will be sitting there waiting to get started in the spring when it first gets to be hot weather. They'll take off like gangbusters. Maybe you went to the Water Conservation Garden and you saw the Chinese pistache trees. If you haven't been there to see them, I recommend you go. In the fall, they turn the most glorious color of red and orange. It's hard to describe how beautiful they are. This is also the time of year when you see the liquid ambers showing off, the sweet gum trees. They look great right now. How do you know you're going to buy one that looks wonderful for you? Now's the time. Go to the nursery now and look at the tree colors of the ones that you like and pick ones that change the colors that you like. There will be some variation in your yard because possibly your yard doesn't get as cold or isn't quite as wet or has a different kind of soil than the nursery has, but it's the best way to get the tree that you want for some gorgeous fall foliage. Why am I not telling you to plant your fruit trees now? Because you can save so much money if you wait until January. That's when the nurseries and the big box stores bring in the bare root plants. And when we get closer to that season, we'll have another session on here, and I'll give you all the instructions to have a great start on trees that will cost you $13 if you buy them in December or January, but they'll cost you $35 or $40 if you buy them in May.
help brighten the holidays for families in need, the Salvation Army in El Cajon will be holding the 38th annual East County Toy and Food Drive this year. If your family needs help with food or gifts for your children this holiday season, you can apply for help by filling out an application on Saturday, November 23rd, or on Saturday, December 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon and from 1:30 to 3 o'clock at the Salvation Army offices. The offices are located at 1011 East Main Street in El Cajon. The toys are for children ages 12 and under. Space is limited, and you must appear in person to apply. No applications will be completed without all verifications requested. To get details, call 619-440-4683, extension 401. You, your group, or your organization are welcome to drop off donations to the Salvation Army location as well. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.